All right, John McCaskill, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for being here.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Let's jump straight in. And something that you talk about a lot on your channels, on your website and everything like that is mindfulness. Talk me through what that is as a concept and what it means to you and how we can work harder on bringing that into our daily lives.
Okay. Yeah. Lots there. So, mindfulness, what it, to me, it's just awareness. It's presence, being in the here and now. In human nature, there's a lot of anticipating the future or ruminating about the past. I'm all about reminiscing. You know, I've got young kids. We all, you know, have nostalgic moments, and I'm fine with that. But what really gets us down is when we start beating ourselves up for what we shoulda, coulda, woulda done in the past, or what we will need to do in the future, or what could possibly go wrong in the future. And that, the thinking about the past in that way can lead to a depression. Thinking about the future that way can lead to anxiety. And if we spend more time present in the moment, it can really help to alleviate some of that. Now, there is a misconception quite often that mindfulness is meditation and that meditation is mindfulness. There's definitely some overlap there. In my eyes, it's kind of this big Venn diagram, and the big circle is wellness. And then if you go a little bit smaller, still within that circle, is mindfulness. And I believe that mindfulness is required for wellness. So there's physical wellness, emotional wellness, and I think emotional wellness and mindfulness have some overlap there. And then within the mindfulness circle, there's meditation. So I do believe that meditation is part of mindfulness, but it's not everything. Mindfulness could be, I mean, we're being mindful right here in this conversation, right? We're paying attention to the here and now. I see you nodding, so you're clearly paying attention to what it is I'm saying. I have to be mindful so that my response actually makes sense. But I can also be mindful with my children, right? I hope that I am. I'm mindful with my spouse. I'm mindful with my colleagues. I'm mindful by myself if I'm walking down the road or, you know, through the woods and I'm paying attention to the rustling of the leaves. It's just, it's presence. And why it's important to me is that it has changed my life. I still am human and I still get wrapped up in thinking about the past and thinking about the future, but I try to very intentionally be aware of the present moment much more often. And that allows me to have better emotional control. It allows me to appreciate the present moment much more often rather than just wishing for the future, which, you know, that's just like fast forwarding, or wishing for something in the past, which you're never going to get back. So yeah, that's what mindfulness kind of means in the kind of overarching idea and why it's important to me.
It's really interesting. Like something I've kind of read a lot about recently is this idea of using your physical self to bring yourself back into the present moment. So for example, you know, a really simple example is like box breathing, and, you know, people using their breath to do it. But even someone, I think it was on a podcast, they were saying, you know, when they're driving and things, they'll spend a few seconds deliberately like feeling all the perforations in a steering wheel while they're driving and trying to really bring themselves back. Is that something that you've experienced and kind of practiced as well?
Absolutely. And that's a great way of framing it, is that, you know, allowing your body to kind of be the control switch or the remote, if you will, to get you out of your head, or sometimes get you into your head, get you into the moment in your head. And yes, the steering wheel one is a great one. I also like to turn the seat heater on and intentionally feel, even when it's warm outside, I'm like, okay, I'm going to intentionally feel that heat against my back and against my butt. And, you know, that, it forces you to be present. Sometimes kind of discomfort, intentional discomfort, can force you to be present, like a cold shower, right? That's why the cold tubs, I mean, certainly there's physical benefits or supposed physical benefits. But there, to me, there's much more of a mental benefit. There are multiple reasons. One, the cold tub, there's really no getting away from the present moment when you're in that cold. And the breathing, you have to do some very intentional breathing when you're in that cold. But then also over and above that, it forces you to do something hard. And when you do those hard things over and over and over, life in general to me becomes easier, because life's hard, but if you do hard things intentionally, those hard things become easier.
Yeah, for sure. There's a very famous British kind of, adventure. He does all these crazy fitness challenges, a guy called Ross Edgley. Okay. I'm not sure if you've heard of him. He's like swimming up the Yukon River and, doing all this crazy stuff. And he calls it your daily dose of discomfort.
And yes, like exactly.
I think a lot of people sometimes take that as they've got to go and do this crazy thing. But sometimes, like, even just going for a walk, if you feel like, you need to get away from your screens or you haven't been outside, but you're tired, you can't be bothered. Like a 20-minute walk can feel really uncomfortable, right? You don't need to go and do this crazy run up a hill or go and, get a personal best in the gym. Like doing just these small kind of little things.
Right.
Was this idea of mindfulness and this discomfort, is that something that you learned from your time in the teams and in the military and things, or was it something that you kind of, came to in civilian life?
Well, I think the discomfort piece came from well before I was ever in the teams.
Really?
I ran track and cross country when I was younger, and our coach was, he was something else. He was like a second dad to us, but he was also like the devil, right? Love-hate relationship with him. And I still stay in contact with him today, and I still call him coach. I mean, I'm almost 48 years old. It's been 30 years since I've run for this guy, and I still call him coach. But he pushed us past our perceived limits physically and mentally, and I think that helped me to develop that at a very early age. And then it was just further honed in the Navy, at the Naval Academy, and then in SEAL training. As far as the mindfulness piece, that, funny enough, did come in the teams, but we didn't call it that. We did box breathing on the shooting range or in the kill house or some form of it, but we called it tactical breathing or resetting, right? We didn't call it breath work or mindfulness because that would have been weird. So I did learn some of that, but I didn't realize that I was learning it then. And then I learned more about it in mental health counseling, because I struggled with anxiety and depression before, and I still have times of that. But the mindfulness and meditation was introduced to me as a way of managing that. And it has been an absolute game changer.
Going back to what you said at the beginning of the conversation, I don't know why it stuck in my head, but I really like what you said about looking back causes depression and looking forward causes anxiety. And that's actually such a simple concept, and I've never looked at it kind of in that way at all. Was that something, I guess, you'd experienced personally and then learned to deal with that?
Yeah, I will say there is clinical depression, clearly, and I don't want to downplay that. But a lot of, and there is even depression tied to the present moment. I am not good enough in the here and now, comparing yourself to others. And I totally understand that. But to me, I've always felt that there was this sadness wrapped around things that I had not done that I felt that I should have. And for me, that was a form of depression. I did have somebody tell me that saying before. I did not make that up. I wish I coined that myself, but I had somebody tell me that. And when I looked at it kind of like you, I was like, oh, that actually makes sense. The anxiety, the depression that I'm feeling. The anxiety is basically just like low-level fear about whether it's the next second what's going to happen, who's going to come through this door, what are they going to say, all the way to, a year from now, what's going to be happening for the country, what's going to be happening with the stock market, what's going to be happening with my job, what's going to be happening with my relationship, these types of things. And that fear causes our sympathetic system is the one that puts us into that fight, flight, or freeze reaction. It causes us to be kind of on overdrive the whole time when we need to be able to come down from that. And so being in that present moment allows us to reset and feel different, kind of calm that anxiety down. It's still going to be there to some level. And then also bring ourselves up a little bit from that depressive state.
And going on from that, what was your experience like with, being able to share that you were feeling that way? There's the whole idea of you know, you say the open up to toughen up, you know, this idea that,
that's right.
You know, like, and men in general are closed off, you know, it's no secret. It's, you know, we don't need to continue, you know, saying how much of a problem it is. We all know how much of a problem it is that men don't talk about this. By the sounds of it, you had an amazing male role model early in life. I imagine you were also surrounded by some great role models in the teams, and then everything you've achieved after that, you know, like what, or maybe not then, perhaps you can speak to
that. You see me smiling. I mean, definitely great role models for being tough, you know, great role models for being pillars of society, if you will. For the most part, some of my SEAL brothers, I don't know whether they would qualify for that. I love them, but anyhow, I think there in my track and cross country days, there was my coach, again, love the man, but there was a ultra masculine kind of, hey, you've got to beat everybody. I mean, I remember one run that we did. It was summer training camp that we went to in Brevard, North Carolina. I grew up in Louisiana, but would go up into the mountains to do these training camps in the summer. And I remember one of the last runs that we did, you know, it's people from all over the country, different schools. And our coach held us back and he let all the other runners go. And then he said, okay, guys, see how many guys you can catch. And that was an ultra masculine competitive kind of thing, which was great because that's what we needed to do as runners. We needed to develop that competitive mindset. But there was no, hey, how are you feeling? How are you doing? Kind of compassionate, empathetic kind of thing there. And there was very little of it initially in the SEAL teams. There's, again, that's a hyper-masculine space, hyper-masculine in the traditional masculine term. But I do remember there was one deployment that I was on, and one of my colleagues, I had to leave early for medical reasons of my then wife, now my ex-wife. I had to leave that deployment early, and it kind of felt like I was letting my guys down. I mean, I wanted to go and be with my wife, but I also felt like I was abandoning my guys. And I remember one of my chiefs pulling me aside. He's like, how are you doing? Like, and that was I don't know, 6 or 7 years into being in the SEAL teams. And that was the first time somebody really asked me, like, and truly cared, not just, hey man, how you doing? But it was like, how are you? And so I would say it's probably changing a lot more in the SEAL teams or in the military writ large now. But back then that was kind of looked at as touchy-feely. Now, since I've gone and sought counseling, and I'm still in therapy. I believe therapy is not just it's not just something to fix your mental state, but it's something to also maintain. If you feel good, you should continue going to therapy. It's like going to the gym, right? You go to the gym and you start getting in shape, and it's not like you suddenly arrive at this point of being in shape and then you can just leave and go not ever go to the gym again. You still got to go to the gym to maintain that physical fitness. Well, the same thing with mental fitness. But anyhow, I'm sorry, I'm getting a little off track. The mindfulness, the meditation, the empathy, the caring for mental and emotional state has definitely come a long way in the military. And I think now it's more acceptable to ask your brothers and sisters, hey, how are you doing? And truly mean it.
How, if you don't mind, what was your reaction when this guy said, you know, how are you? Were you kind of taken aback and sort of closed off, or did you actually kind of open up?
No, great point. I was, I did open up. I was frustrated, and I think I had closed off, and I didn't expect anybody to ask me. But when he did, I was like, yeah, man, actually, I feel I'm frustrated with the current situation. I'm frustrated that I'm leaving you guys. I feel like I'm abandoning you. Yes, I think it's the right thing to do because, you know, I care for my wife, but I still felt that I was abandoning the boys, the mission. So yeah, I voiced that and man, it felt like a load had been taken off. And then he was like, hey, you're not abandoning us. For him to tell me that that was like, oh, okay, to hear that from one of my most respected men within the platoon, to hear that I was not abandoning them, that was huge.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Yeah, I was kind of wondering, well, because as you said, it has changed so much, even in the last like 10 years, you know, the idea of a man going to therapy, especially like, you know, someone who's considered tough, you know, like an ex-Navy right. SEAL, things like that, you know, you'd be like, no way, this guy's good. He's got everything sorted out. You know, he's tough. He's dealt with, it's really interesting. I've had a Royal Marine on the podcast, a guy I know called Ben Williams over here in the UK. And he talked a lot about, you know, he's gone from, you know, serving in Afghanistan as a Royal Marine, frontline, all this kind of stuff. And then, you know, now is like, he's founded a startup, you know, and he works for a startup, and he's like, this is more stressful than anything I ever did over there. Because he talked about it, man. Yeah. He said it was like acute stress over there. He's like, you're prepared for it. You're kind of in it. You know, you see, it's almost, and it's short bursts, where he's like, now it's like prolonged stress and it's the weight of doing it all. And from what he said, you know, he kind of said it's so much worse. And for people like myself, or, you know, other civilians listening who have no concept of what that's actually like beyond watching Lone Survivor on Netflix, or, you know, like any of this stuff, you know, we have no concept of it. So we instantly look and we go, well, it doesn't get more stressful than that. So it was really interesting to hear, you know, the differences and how it works.
Yeah. No, I like that term, the acute stress. I mean, it's life or death situations. It's, you know, it's extreme, like acute. But yes, it's one, you've trained for it, and then, and you somewhat know what to expect. Yes, the battlefield is very, they call it the fog of war, and there's lots there that you can't anticipate for. But for the most part, you know, you've got your weapon, you've got your guys, you've got the radio, you've got the overhead support. For the most part, you have an idea of what is there. Yes, it's still very stressful, but I'll tell you, the thing that stresses me out more than anything is being a father. I love my kids. I adore them, but I'm trying to please them. And, you know, I've got young kids, and trying to please all three of them simultaneously is never going to ever happen. And, you know, they test my patience. I am far more stressed with being a father than I ever was in the SEAL teams, or at least like you said, kind of over that protracted period. Day to day, being a father is more stressful than being in the SEAL teams.
I'm sure plenty of dads out there listening, including our founder Emmett. He talks a lot about it. I'm sure he definitely agree with you that fatherhood can't be easy. That leads me quite nicely into something else I wanted to talk to you about, and that's the concept of leadership. You know, it's something that you talk about a huge amount with what you do now and things like that. And you have this thing called the four pillars of leadership and how they work. So, you know, grit, resilience, compassion, and preparedness. Can you talk me through all of those as a concept and what that means?
Yeah. And funny enough, I also believe that all four of those are built on a foundation of mindfulness. But yeah, when I say preparedness, I'm not talking about preparation. You know, preparation is preparing for something in particular. Preparedness is being generally prepared for whatever life is going to throw at you. And as a leader, if you're not generally prepared for the infinite number of fires that you're going to have to put out, you're going to fail. Now, when I say preparedness there, you're not prepared for each individual fire that you're putting out, proverbial fire that you're putting out is different. But generally, if you know how to respond in your body, in your mind, that is going to help you to deal with what you may have heard is a VUCA environments, VUCA, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. And as a leader, those are the fires that you're going to have to put out. And having some level of just general preparedness is going to allow you to handle those VUCA environments. Then grit, or rather, let's start with resilience before grit. Resilience allows you to bounce back. You know, in life, you're basically in one of three places. You're either just getting knocked down from something, some type of difficulty. You're getting back up from having dealt with some type of difficulty, or some type of difficulty is about to knock you down. So you have to develop some type of resilience, and that can be in the moment. You know, as you deal with more difficulty, you're going to develop that resilience, or preparing for these moments. And that can be like trying to change how you manage stress. It can be what you do for your body and your mind. Exercise can help you to be more physically, but also mentally and emotionally resilient. So you have to develop these so that when these inevitable knockdowns come, you don't stay down. You're able to get back up. As far as the grit, to me, it's really what Angela Duckworth defines in her book as being able to see a long-term goal and then break it down into smaller digestible chunks, right? I'm sure you've heard the proverbial saying, how do you eat an elephant? One bite
at a time.
Just about
to say.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, you get overwhelmed when you look at that elephant, and we all have these elephants in life. And as a leader, there's going to be a number of elephants that come. And if you don't learn to, okay, look at this elephant, break it down into smaller chunks, then you're going to get overrun. And then the last piece that I feel is a little touchy-feely in most people's opinion is compassion. And I saw that compassion in the SEAL teams, like I just told you about, that one experience. But I also saw compassion in our SEAL training. You know, guys were lifting others up, saying, hey, you got this, you can do it, kind of offering support. Very few people make it through that training without showing somebody else compassion, or the flip side of that coin, having compassion shown to them. We all make it through together. And that same continues out throughout the SEAL teams, throughout any form of leadership. Eventually, you're going to have to lean on somebody and be supported through compassion. And as a leader, if you don't have compassion for yourself and for your people, to me, that's just being a manager. And you need to understand that the people that you're leading are human beings with their own lives, their own concerns, their own battles that they're fighting, be it financial, relationship, spiritual, emotional, all these different battles. And if you don't at least understand that everyone is fighting some type of battle, that you're not going to have people inspired to work for you.
Yeah. Compassion, if anything, some you could argue is the most important one, right?
I would argue it is. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But weirdly enough, for me, preparedness resonated with me the most, purely because that was the one I was kind of, I was a bit unsure about. I wasn't really sure how it would be defined. I really liked what you said, how it's very different to preparation. I think for me personally, and maybe people listening as well, I think I definitely fall into the preparation thing a bit more. So I'm thinking, like, for example, this podcast, I'm like, right, I'm going to go and do my research and I'm going to do this. And then, but, you know, rather than thinking, well, I do a podcast every week, let's be let's have everything kind of ready. Or maybe I do, thinking about it, but yeah, like, I'm, sure. I'm definitely not being, I definitely could probably be a bit more mindful about that stuff. So that's like, right. I really like that
and,
idea.
And I'm certainly not saying preparation isn't important. I mean, if you have a specific mission or a specific task, you still have to prepare for that specific thing. But there are going to be quote unquote missions in our life that pop up that we just cannot prepare specifically for. So, one of them that I think about all the time is my now oldest daughter, who's 8. When she was 6 months old, she went through a massive surgery to remove a big tumor on her liver. She had 5/8 of her liver removed, which, you know, she's like this big, like her liver's got to be like the size of my hand or smaller than that. Probably much smaller than that. And for the surgeons to go in there and do what they did, I mean, that was miraculous. But I was prepared for that because of preparedness, not preparation. There was no amount of preparation that I could do to prepare me for that. Yeah, but I knew that I was prepared because of preparedness.
Yeah. I suppose it goes back to like the kind of stoicism thing of like realizing what you can and what you can't control and stuff, right?
Exactly.
You know, that's kind of, yeah, it's like that sort of way of thinking of realizing that. Yeah, right. I really like, with that in mind then, you know, these kind of four pillars and, you know, everything about leadership, there's also a certain sense of you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And with that in mind, how important is it to make sure that you're, you know, also, you know, leading in the correct way, but also surrounding yourself with the right team? How important is that?
Yeah. So surrounding yourself with the right team is great if you have a choice, right? Like picking your all-star team. But how often in life do we actually get that choice to sit here and say, you know what, I have a team of 10 people and I'm going to select from these 100 the 10 best, or at least the 10 that I believe are the best. Very rarely do we get that opportunity. Finding very high performing teams to be a part of initially, like if there's a very high performing organization that you want to join, I think that's one way to surround yourself with high performing individuals, is joining a team that's already created. But even that is pretty rare. So I say that as a leader, it's your job to inspire greatness in your people, and everybody has some level of greatness in them. It's not something that is, you know, exclusive to only a select few of individuals, but finding that greatness, that's on the leader. Finding who is good at one job or one key attribute, you know, the preparedness, the resilience, the grit, the compassion, finding out who has those and helping to develop those strengths, and then seeing where there's some challenges and bringing those up. Now, I'll also say that as a leader, our job is to inspire, you know, not make somebody do something. So if we want to lead that horse to water, now we've led them to water, now how can we inspire them to drink? That's what I think we need to do. And we also need to, as leaders, realize that our people don't work for us. We work for our people. Our job is to provide time, trust, and top cover, and remove any impediments that are in the way from them achieving their goals. And now, quite often those goals are something that we've given them. Hey, we need you to complete this task. We need you to meet this deadline. But what's keeping them from reaching that deadline? What's keeping that horse from drinking that water? Maybe there's a mental block. Maybe there's some other type of block, a distraction. Maybe there's a misalignment in priorities. And that's where leaders really, that's why they get paid more, or at least most of the time. When I say most of the time, there are leaders that are lower in the ranks. Leadership doesn't necessarily come with title, but it comes with being able to inspire others. And sometimes that leadership comes from lower down in the ranks.
Yeah, definitely. It's that fine line, isn't it? Of like ensuring that your people have, you know, the agency to go and do things themselves. You know, there's a lot of talk at the moment about high agency and low agency people. You know, the low agency person sits and makes a help sign in the sand when they're stranded on an island. The high agency person makes a raft and leaves.
Yeah.
You know, they're equipped with the same thing. You know, so it's this whole idea. And actually, I really like what you said there about, you know, you as a leader, you're essentially working for everyone else. They're not working for you. And I think that's the problem. You know, and I don't know. It's a difficult one. I think a lot of the time, where the reason things go bad is just ego. Like ego gets in the way, and you know, people let the power go to their heads. And I hate to say it, but like especially men, like we do.
Oh,
you know, you
sure.
get we do let it go to our heads, and we think we're big and powerful, and you know, we enjoy having that power over other people. I'm not saying everyone and things like that, but you know, I think that's a huge problem. I wonder, you know, is that something encountered, and if so, whether you're listening to this and you're finding, you know, you're looking back and you're going, shh, Maybe I am, you know, doing the ego a bit, or maybe you're recognizing that in someone else. What kind of tips would you give to kind of either communicate to your leader that you'd like to see improvements, or if you are a leader, how you can, you know, be more effective?
Yeah, I think, again, I think leadership can come from wherever in the ranks, and quite often leaders have to manage up. And what I mean by that is advising their bosses. Hey, this is what I see. Now, it's still the boss's prerogative which way they would want to go, but you can say, hey, boss, I think you're missing something. This is something that I would like to highlight, bring to your attention, these different types of things. And I think, again, as a leader, you can do that from wherever you are within the ranks. Shoot, now I'm forgetting the question. I got off track there. Can you remind me really quick, Sandy?
Start off. Yeah, no, I realize as I was saying, I was like, I've just asked you about 10 questions. I'm sorry, John. But like, you know, how can I suppose, like, looking first of all, as a leader, You know, how can you make sure that you keep your ego in check, essentially, yes. And not let the beast come out and take over?
Right. No, great point. And when I think about ego, I don't know if you ever watched the show Breaking Bad at all.
Dude, I'm one of 10 people on the planet who hasn't seen it. Everyone shouts at me. Everyone shouts at me all the time to watch it. Yeah. I know it's on the list.
It's incredibly violent. I don't know that I'm very proud that I watched it, but I did. I got sucked into it. And Walter White, kind of the protagonist, if you can call him that in this particular show, because he's pretty evil in a weird way. Anyway, the reason I mention him is for your listeners who aren't familiar, and for you, Sandy, he's a chemistry teacher who ends up becoming he mixes meth in this RV, and he ends up becoming incredibly wealthy, and he keeps doing it throughout all the seasons. He keeps telling himself and others, I'm doing this for my family. I'm doing this for my family. I'm doing this for my family. And then in one of the very last episodes of the show, he says, you know what? It was never about my family. It was all about me. I did this for myself. And you're right. As men, that's very easy to do is, hey, convince yourself, hey, I'm doing this for my family. I'm doing this for my family. But really, when you peel back that onion, you're doing it so that you can brag about how much money you make. You can, you know, drive the nice car, have the nice house, and show everybody that you're successful. I'm not against being successful. I'm not against having a nice car, a nice house. But why are you doing it? What is it? We all work so hard to make money, to buy things, to impress people that we don't know. And I'm sure I butchered that saying, but it's something to that
point. I know what you mean.
Yeah. And man, when you really think about it, that's where the ego comes in, as it is, we're trying to impress people that we don't even know or that we don't really care about. And so Ryan Holiday has a book, I'm sure you've heard of it, Ego is the Enemy. He's the same guy who wrote Obstacle is the Way and some other ones, the
Daily book. Stoic.
Yeah. Oh, fantastic. I've got it on my shelf back there. Oh,
yeah. No way.
Stillness is the Key, also sitting there.
Yes, anyway. That's a good one.
So anyway, the ego, I think there's a level of ego that is important to have, you know, to drive us, to get us to do hard things again. But when it starts being the only reason that you're doing something, that's when it really becomes dangerous. And as a leader, people can see it. People, I mean, they can see it from a mile away. It's like, hey, this guy has a massive ego. And the last thing that they want to do is work for somebody that's doing something strictly out of ego. They, again, coming back to the compassion piece, it's hard to have a big ego and be compassionate simultaneously.
That's a really good point, actually. Yeah. So it does come back to that pillar there. Yeah. Like you said, you know, the Walter White example is perfect. And like, it's almost impossible to be compassionate about other people when you're, even if you don't know it, even if you, like you said, even if you're convincing yourself, I did it for my family and stuff, it's so difficult to actually show that compassion and that love to other people, because you're doing it's like purely just for yourself. You know, it's, I can't think of the word, but yeah, it's, you're not doing it for anyone else. That makes complete sense. I really like that. That's cool. So in terms of, you know, kind of finishing up, we have what we call the final lap. So within the Pit Stop app, we have this thing called the Wheel of Life, which is six aspects across a man's life that we think if you can work on, you know, one at a time. We've only got so many hours in the day, but you know, working on those, and you can holistically improve your life across every aspect. You know, people talk so much about mental health and all this stuff, and you know, you'll know this. Like, it's not, if you just work on mental fitness all the time, like there's so many exterior factors that you need to work on. So we have health, mindset, leisure, relationships, career, and finance. So by looking at improving all of those, hopefully that will lead you to, you know, kind of living a better life. So I've got a kind of question for each one of those that I'm gonna throw at you. So first of all, we'll kick off with health. What are three simple things that you do each day to improve your health?
Yeah, well, I don't know that I do them every day, but I try to really focus on sleep. Sleep, I believe, is foundational to so much. And then I try to spend some time meditating in some form or fashion. That meditation could be, you know, focusing on my breath as I sit for 10 or 15 minutes. It could be a body scan, something there. And then just try to get some type of movement in. That movement could be going to the gym. It could be going for a run, but it could be something like you mentioned before, something as simple as taking the dogs for a walk. Moving, I think, is hugely important.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I do like at least 30 minutes of walk a day, and that's...
There you go.
Yeah, gym's good, but I think you have to get outside. You have to get outside as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Next up, mindset. What is one piece of advice that you would give to someone to help improve their mental fitness?
One piece of advice. I mean, I'd be remiss if I didn't say meditation, but if I may give two, I would say, say some form of meditation and or mindfulness. And then I would say therapy. Again, for the reasons I mentioned it before, is it's not solely to fix broken mental health, quote unquote, but it's to maintain good mental fitness.
Yeah. Prevention rather than reaction. I like that.
Exactly.
That's really cool. Leisure. You're a very busy man. What does taking time out for you look like?
Yeah. Well, for me, reading a good book, I love reading, is a good leisure thing, but I do that less and less now. I've turned to audiobooks, but for me, I have to find some level of play, something fun. Like I've actually got my little to-do list here and it literally has play written down. Now that could be play with my kids, or it could be, last Monday, a week past from today, I went and skied all by myself. I had things scheduled for the day and I was like, you know what? I'm just going to cancel or reschedule all this and just go play. And I think that you have to find what you enjoy for that leisure, but that leisure doesn't have to be grown up leisure. You can have some fun too.
Yeah, 100%. I'm all for play. I think it's so important, especially going back to like the men thing and the ego thing. We become so convinced and wrapped up in our own story about how successful we're being and what we're doing that we forget that this is all, we only get one go around. You might as have a bit of fun. Exactly. What are you reading at the moment? What sort of books are you into?
So I am reading Mel Robbins' new book called Let Them. Yeah, she had a book a while back. I forget what it was called, but it was basically about when your alarm clock goes off in the morning, counting down like you're a NASA astronaut, countdown 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and then just get up. And she's applied that across her life. Well, this Let Them theory is saying, don't get so wrapped up in what people say or what they do. They're going to do their own thing. They're going to say what they're going to say, and let them, and just kind of let it be like water off a duck's back. It's going to happen. Now, what do you do? And it comes back to what you talked about before, kind of figuring out what you can control and what you can't, and then moving forward.
That's very cool. Yeah, I like that. Relationships. What's one piece of advice that you would give to maintain good relationships in life?
Communication. You've got to communicate. I'm sure that's been said many times, but if you're not communicating, if you're holding back, you're going to end up building resentment, or resentment's going to be built up on the other side of the relationship. You have to communicate. You have to communicate about things that are difficult. Have those crucial conversations. Never read that book, Crucial Conversations. Fantastic read. But it's all about how to communicate more effectively without necessarily putting anybody on the defensive. And I think that's what you have to be able to do in a relationship.
Yeah, for sure. Career. What is one thing that you could attribute your career success to?
Consistency and not necessarily consistency in the same thing every day, but consistency in hard work with coming back to play. I think you have to have some type of balance there, but it's not about, going 100 miles an hour for 1 week. It's about going 30 miles an hour for years. And that's, the old tortoise and the hare, there's truth there. And how old is that fable, right? there's absolute truth there.
Yeah. Cliches are cliches for a reason. My dad recently told me, he said, turns out our family have a motto, and it's in Latin, it's festina lente, which means make haste slowly.
Oh,
which I really like.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I really,
we have a saying similar to that in the SEAL teams: is slow is smooth, smooth is fast.
Yeah, and, I've heard that.
You know, that applies to like what we're doing on the shooting range, right? Sometimes guys just try to move so fast they will forget to load a weapon, or they'll do something silly that they shouldn't have done. But that also applies to life. You know, if you slow down, you can smooth things out, and as you smooth things out, you speed up.
I love that. That's really cool. And then the last one, again, this is a topic, an interesting topic, especially men talk about it all the time, but also we don't actually ever talk to each other about it and help each other. We just brag. And that's finance. So with that, what's the best way to make your money work for you?
Yeah, well, my way of doing it is I thought that I was a great financial manager myself, and I found out pretty quickly I had no idea what I was doing. So my advice is, if you aren't a financial expert, fire yourself and hire an expert.
Yeah.
and yes, there's going to be some fees involved, but I tell you, having an expert and paying fees to me is better than me just throwing money away because I think that I know what I'm doing with it. So yeah, fire your financial planner, and that's typically it's yourself, firing yourself. Hire experts.
I like that. It comes back to the ego thing, right? You know, like, yeah. recognizing where your strengths and flaws are at. You talked about it, the leadership, in the terms of, you know, looking at other people, but also being able to look within yourself at what you're good at and what you're not good at is really
exactly.
important, right?
Exactly. Absolutely. Acknowledge your strengths and your weaknesses, and, you know, hire people around you. Oh man, I saw this fantastic meme. Sorry, Sandy, I'm going to get off track here, but I saw this fantastic meme yesterday. It shows, you know, a body, and he's holding a circle, and it says strengths, right? And then he's holding a circle, but he has a square cut out of his body. And then there's another person next to him, and this person is holding a square and has a circle cut out, and it means, hey, you might not have all the strengths yourself, but you can surround yourself with people who can fill your weaknesses with their strengths. And I think you have to acknowledge your own strengths and weaknesses and realize you are not going to be the best at absolutely everything ever. Yeah. So find your team that can support you.
Yeah, I love that. John, thank you. This conversation has been so cool. There's been so much value across there. Where can people go if they want to keep up with all the other stuff that you're doing?
Yeah, the easiest way is to go to johnmacaskill.com/links. That's johnmacaskill.com/links. And that takes you to my link tree that has all the different things that I'm doing. That's probably the best way.
Yeah, love that. Yeah, if anyone wants to check out, you'll be able to find the link to that down in the show notes below this episode, thanks, wherever you're listening. Yeah, thanks, John, for being here.
My
thank
pleasure.
You so much to thanks to you guys me. For listening. And yeah, we will see you guys for the next one.